Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality, everyone. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm thrilled that you're with us today. We're going to have a lot of fun today. As you know, this is an area which is huge. We can talk about all kinds of things here, but the core of what we talk about is the afterlife. What happens at death and after death? We know for certain all of this stuff. We know where and how it happens, but most people have no idea because science still refuses to study it. Now, one of the many wonderful things I've learned in the course of doing all this afterlife-related research and education is how many people there are who have chosen to devote their whole lives to doing one small part of the work of sharing these truths with the world. And many of these dedicated people have been our guests on Seek Reality in the past. We've finished now 5+ years of Seek Reality. We owe these people a tremendous debt. Some of us concentrate on assembling the big picture, which is what I try to do for you, but it's important to put it all together, but we need stuff to put together in order to be able to do that. And if it were not for the work of these amazing researchers, these people who have made themselves experts in some small but crucially important areas, those of us who are trying to put it all together for you wouldn't even have a prayer. I'm thrilled to call some of these great researchers my friends, and I find today's Seek Reality guest to be especially delightful. This is N. Riley Haggerty's fourth visit with us, and each time he's brought to share with us some new and delightful gem from the past. Riley, it seems to me, is probably he's eccentric, but he's delightful, and he's one of those people that when you sort of start talking with him, everything he says is amusing. Nearly all of my own earliest research, the research that actually established for me that there is an afterlife and what that afterlife is like, was done by reading accounts from the dead that were received through deep trance mediums in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. There are reasons why that period was a flowering of wonderful communications from people that we used to think were dead, but that was a long time ago. Most of the records of that extraordinary period might well be lost if not for people like our friend N. Riley Haggerty, who has made it his life's work to research and preserve these records of that amazing time. Riley's book that we're going to talk about today is almost 20 years old now. But it's brand new because, of course, it talks about a time long ago and it brings it into the future. The French Revelation, the extraordinary eyewitness account of the psychic wonder of Rochester, Emily S. French, was originally written by attorney Edward C. Randall. But if it were not for Riley's exhaustive work in researching and compiling these records in a modern book, you would probably never know about Emily French, and that would be tragic. Riley, welcome. We are so glad you're back.
Hey, it's good to be here. Can you hear me okay?
I can just fine.
Now, so I got my phone balanced on my chest here.
Well, this is a rather novel way to do things, but that's good. Whatever's comfortable for you. Most people who listen, I think, are driving, so they think it's amusing that you're doing that. But anyway, the French Revelation is being called the most inclusive written record of the testing of Emily S. French, the phenomenal independent direct voice medium. And your story really is extraordinary. But first, Riley, let's share a bit about your own story. What first got you interested in studying the great mediums of a century ago?
I was a professional musician in Philadelphia, and I had been signed to an agency for 20 years, and I had every intention to stay with that musical career. My young fiance, 29 years old, was suddenly struck down by leukemia, and off she went to Johns Hopkins Hospital for a six-month drama. 2 weeks before her passing, she called me to her bedside and said, she goes, Bradley's here. Now, 2 months previous to her going to the hospital, her and I went and visited the grave of Bradley. Bradley was her son, who died 15, He died 15 years previous, 2 years old, of asthma. So I instinctively just turned around in the room, thinking that Bradley was standing there, and I thought, well, wait a minute. We were at his grave. She said, he's standing right behind you. She goes, he's a spirit, and he's come to take me over to the spirit world. I'm not going to make it through this dreadful situation. So her clairvoyant visions after she passed stayed with me. And I retired from the music industry, and I made it my life mission to find the answers to life after death. So I had none. I was raised a strict Roman Catholic in private schools, so I had no answers. But I thought that someone whose personality was so vibrant and wonderful, how could they just be gone?
Yes.
So I dedicated my life to finding my own answers to life after death, and that's what I suggest everyone has to do. You've got to take it upon yourself. So here I am 30 years later with a sixth published book coming out soon, and sitting here talking to you.
But is this what you mainly do? This is really an obsession for you, isn't it?
It's not what I mainly do. I work for a wonderful insurance company. I work from home. I still am a musician. I'm married to an acupuncturist and a incredible clairvoyant. My wife's one of the best clairvoyants I've ever witnessed. And we live in a beautiful farmhouse.
Riley, pause and explain what a clairvoyant is, because many people may not know.
A clairvoyant is different from the medium that we're discussing in the French Revelation. Clairvoyant is a mental medium, meaning that people come to my wife and they sit down and she holds their hands, and then she gives them first impressions coming from the spirit world. And then she throws cards, and that's mental mediumship. The medium is receiving messages mentally from the spirit world and then conveys the messages to the sitters. In the case of Mrs. French, in the French Revelation, she had what I would consider probably the highest form of mediumship. That is, in her case, in a darkened room, the spirit voices would manifest out of thin air about 2 feet up above her head, generally, right out of the thin air, and address the sitters in their own voice. It's staggering to believe by most people, but here's the records right here, and that's independent voice.
Say they manifested above her head, could you see them? Could people see them? Because it was dark. It was dark.
Yeah, it's her and her senses. The room had to be completely dark. It's really an astounding case. You know, after my fiance passed away, I spent 2 or 3 years just collecting books, reading everything I could on anything having to do with spirits and seances. And my brother came upon one of the books by the famous lawyer who investigated Mrs. French, Edward C. Randall. It was copywritten in 1916, and he sent me the book in the mail. And that's what started me on my research for Emily French, because the lawyer, Edward Randall from Buffalo, New York, had published 5 books concerning the seances he held with Mrs. French, so they were long out of print and rare. It took me 10 years to find all of the work of Edward C. Randall with Mrs. French, some of which I found in Australia, which had never been published before. And I compiled and edited all of their seances into one specific work. That's the French Revelation.
Wow.
The lawyer who approached Mrs. French initially to expose her as a fraud. And this is one of the most famous trial lawyers in Buffalo. A man who had masterful abilities at sifting evidence and interrogating witnesses. His associates told him that the cleverest fraud in America and a magician of the highest class, her name is Mrs. French, lives in Rochester. And they said, would you please go and expose this humbug?
Yes.
So off he went to Tremont Street. It was 227 Tremont Street in Rochester. He knocks on the door, and there's 2 other men of national reputation already at the house, one of which he knew. It's believed to be Andrew Carnegie.
my goodness.
Also, the inspector of the Erie Canal, Ernest Tubbs, was there.
Wow.
Mr. Randa, who was a businessman besides lawyer, knew Andrew Carnegie. He also knew Ernest Tubbs. But they did not know what his mission was at the house. So he was asked, "Why are you here?" He said, he wasn't about to tell these gentlemen. He was there to expose Mrs. French.
Right.
So he never met her. So they said, "Well, this is Mrs. French right over here." She was a frail old woman, a beautiful character, and she could barely hear. And she had a very silvery little voice. And so immediately Mr. Randall knew this could not possibly be the cleverest frog in America. She's, you know, back then,
right,
60 plus years, turn of the century, you were considered very old. So they said, "Well, Mr. Randall, we're about to go upstairs and have the seance. How would you like to join us?" So off they went upstairs, and they sat in the dark, and Mr. Randall heard very loud whispers, some of which were male voices. But being an agnostic at the time, he said it's too incredible to be true. So he wasn't convinced. The only thing he could come up with was that Mrs. French somehow was an expert ventriloquist.
Yes, yes. Really good
at it. The only thing, you know, a critic can say when they're in a corner is, you know, ventriloquism. So he said, he asked Mrs. French, he said, "Would you be my guest at my house in Buffalo? I'll take you to my house, and under my own conditions, would you mind if I studied your mediumship?" Because he said right out, "I'm not convinced." And Mrs. French said nothing would give her greater pleasure.
Really?
The gentleman probably laughed. Oh, yeah. She said, "Yes, I'll do that."
Good for her.
Off they went. And to make a long story short, before we get into any other aspect of this, Mr. Randall put conditions on her. In other words, they went upstairs in his house. He turned the lights off, the total darkness. He took hold of Mrs. French's hands. He said, "Do you mind if I put my feet gently on your feet?" She sat right in front of him, two chairs facing each other. And then he said, "Above all, would you mind at all if you leaned over and put your mouth on the side of my wrist? Just lean over. So I have your mouth controlled, your hands controlled, and your feet." And there they sat for 10, 15 minutes. Mr. Randall's lips curled in scorn as he thought, I've taught her. I've got her now because this is the trick. Suddenly, right from the dark, came one of the spirit controls and just said, Mr. Randall, stop this foolishness. Sit back. Let go of this poor woman."
Oh,
and this
was
going to be the first lesson from agnosticism to belief. And that's what she was so blown out of the water.
I'm sure.
He became a champion for the cause because he tested Mrs. French in every conceivable way he could, bringing his legal mind to bear. So once he was convinced that the voices were independent and coming from thin air that he could have conversations with, they sat, it's unprecedented in all of psychic research, for 22 consecutive years.
Wow.
Also, Randall had the mental wherewithal to hire expert stenographers who could come in and take down in shorthand in the total dark what the spirits were saying. So this enabled Mr. Randall, who, because of his integrity and his determination, he attracted many, many interesting spirits into the seances. This way, Randall could ask the spirits questions, and the stenographers could take down all of what they were saying.
Yes.
So, in essence, my book has all of the seance stenographic notes. And when I tell you that some of them are so thrilling, so startling, and beautiful, that it's one of the best pieces of work. I don't mean just my book. I mean their work, Mrs. French and Mr. Randall. It is truly one of the most important bodies of work in all of psychic history because Mr. Randall asked the spirits about everything. And you cannot deny the intellectual integrity behind what the spirits are saying.
Wow.
So that's what the French Revolution is.
People would like to know why they had to be in the dark. So I'm assuming it was because she was producing ectoplasm, which made a voice box, right?
Yeah, well, you know, there's many different words, you know, you could apply. I mean, when you say ectoplasm, most people don't even know what you're talking about. But
I know.
there's many different mediums for many different areas of phenomena. A lot of it's covered in all my books, different mediums, a lot of them female mediums, I'm proud to say. And every medium is different. But in Mrs. French's case, the psychic force put out by Mrs. French enabled the spirits that are in a higher vibration to come into that magnetic force, and that enables them to lower their vibration so that they can form a larynx throat, and they can have the same somewhat organs that a human physical body would have.
Yes.
And they're enabling them to walk into this force field, and suddenly their organs of respiration in their throat is now a denser quality, just like it was in the physical world, that enables them to speak. I'm going to give you right now an explanation that the spirit group actually said themselves.
Good.
When Mr. Randall asked them, what are the conditions that enable you to speak? The spirit says, there are in our group 7 people, all expert in the handling of the electric and magnetic forces. And when you and the psychic, Mrs. French, meet, the vital force that emanates from her personality is gathered up. We also take physical emanations, substances, from you and the others with you, while we contribute to the mass a certain spirit force. Now, that force, which we gather and distribute, is just as material as any substance that you would gather for any purpose. It is simply higher in vibration. We clothe the organs of respiration of the spirit who is to speak, so that his voice will sound in your atmosphere. And when this condition is brought about, it is just as natural for a spirit as it is for you. You then have what is known as the direct or independent voice. That is the voice of a spirit speaking as in earth life.
That is wonderful. But it seems that they do essentially the same thing that Leslie Flint and other direct voice mediums have done, which is, and you're right, we do explain ectoplasm here every once in a while, but we should talk about it again. This is a material that is produced, they think, by the, you know, organs, internal organs, the with diabetes, whatever that organ is, pancreas, right? So they're producing your pancreas, if you are a medium, can produce this kind of sort of material, which looks like whitey gauzy stuff, which spirits in a physical seance can clothe themselves in, and suddenly they appear. And what seems to have happened with the direct voice mediumship of Leslie Flint was that he would form a voice box. He didn't. In the air, the spirits would form a voice box, which then the spirit would adapt to being his own, obviously with help, as you point out. And it would sound like that person had sounded in life. And since some people who had been recorded and then died, some famous people did come through Leslie Flint, you could compare it. It was the same voice. So what she was doing, whatever it may have been ectoplasm, but she was producing some material which they would then be able to use to create the organs for speech. And they would sound, correct, they would sound like the person had sounded in life. Did they know that for sure?
Definitely.
Isn't that amazing?
Leslie Flint was the same kind of medium as such as Emily French.
Yes.
They're both independent voice mediums. You go for a setting. It's truly extraordinary.
Yes.
Go for a setting. They lower the lights, and then suddenly out of the thin air, a spirit is talking to you.
Yes.
And I've heard the dark voice myself with 3-4 physical mediums, and it's staggeringly beautiful.
Yes, it's amazing. Anyone who's interested can just Google Leslie Flint. There are a lot of Leslie Flint recordings that you can just listen to. And as some of famous people, you can see, you can compare it to what you know of that famous person's voice. He, I think, was the last of the great direct voice mediums, right?
Yes. Yeah, he was. And in that same period in the 90s, I mean, we were very fortunate to have someone of that caliber still living. But he and another physical medium, David LeBaron from Seattle, they were two of the last truly great mediums. But Leslie Flint, like you were saying, simply because it was so much later in time, was obviously recorded
many times
by those two people. But back in the day of Emily French, unfortunately, they didn't have recording devices. But still, it's the same thing.
So what kind of thing? You say wonderful things were received. The spirit said wonderful things. Do you have any examples of the kinds of things they said through Mrs. French?
Well, the book is filled.
Yes, I saw that. Yes.
With first-hand accounts of what happened at the moment of death, which I like.
Yes.
It's got descriptions of every conceivable thing about the spirit life, afterlife, the transition, what happened, what they saw. And another interesting thing I have is that they, French and Randall, they had rescue circles where it must have been a stunning thing to witness, because the spirit controls, those who are in charge of the seances on the spirit side, would bring spirits to their seances in the hopes that Mr. Randall could awaken them, because they refused to believe that they had passed away.
Wow. Oh my.
You can just imagine, just imagine that situation where you would have to have your wits about you to the nth degree to, and Randall did, because he had been at it for so long, that they actually had rescue circles a couple times a week. They sat several times a week, Mrs. French and Mr. Randall, and the spirit controls would come in and say, we're bringing someone through who right now we can't get to because they refuse to believe they passed away. And it brings up an interesting point that if you take anyone, I mean anyone, even in modern times, who has no sense of spirituality about them, they have nothing, no thought about the afterlife or spirits or anything, quote, spiritual, and they die suddenly, car accident, whatever it is, in 1 millisecond, they're in another dimension. Since their only reference point is the physical world, they, of course, are going to think they're dreaming. Who wouldn't?
Yes. Yeah.
All they
Very
have
vividly.
Is the physical world is their point of reference, nothing else. So the first thought is, why isn't anyone answering me? You know, they can see everyone. They walk around. And then eventually, you know, they see their body if it's an accident or something. And it must be stunning to sit there and watch, see your own body, but then think this whole thing's a dream. In the case of Randall and French, that's what would happen. They would bring spirits to the circle, the sitting room, and then Randall would have a discussion with these spirits. And can you imagine the situation where the spirit control starts with bringing someone in, and the spirit suddenly thunders, his voice thundering with anger in the room. Who are you, and how dare you compel me into your house?
Yes.
And who is that person over there taking down the notes? You know, they don't know where they are, and they're wondering what the hell they're doing. And Randall has to slowly, slowly. Can you imagine trying to talk someone into
yes.
they passed away and they don't believe it?
Yeah, this was something that was happening a lot with these very, very powerful mediums during the First World War, because many of these young people had no clue that they had died. It wasn't obvious to them. And they also say that if you are looking at your own dead body, you often don't recognize it because you're looking for the first time straight at your face. It's not in a mirror, and you look quite different than you think you look. And it's dead anyway, so sometimes that doesn't persuade them. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to do, to be rescuing these people, because they could be having so much fun, and instead they're all confused and sad and angry, and all this negative stuff is going on.
You know, there's, even now, there could be millions of spirits, not necessarily evil, that are wandering the earth.
Yes.
They're just in the earth plane, thinking that they're dreaming. Time doesn't exist in the spirit world. It's only relative to the physical world. But there are thousands, millions of spirits that they can't be reached yet. I mean, progress is open to every spirit, but they have to come to the realization slowly themselves. Now, in the case of some of the earthbound spirits with Randall, he would first say to them, the spirit would say, why am I here? What is this? He'd say, this is Mrs. French. She's a medium, and I'm a lawyer, and we're sitting here. We have these meetings several times a week, and it's here where we communicate with the spirit world. And, of course, the spirit will say, well, what's that for? Is this all about ghosts? You know, I'm not that.
Yeah, right. Right.
Can you imagine that?
Oh, yes.
He eventually says to them, in one case, the spirit refused to believe they were gone, and the spirit control was watching all the proceedings, broke in. He breaks in and says, why don't you tell them the truth? You were shot while you were robbing this person.
Oh, my. One of these people? Goodness.
The spirit robbed somebody and was shot. And then Mr. Randall says, well, here's what happened. The bullet penetrated your body, and you left the physical world. What do you mean by that? Well, you're now no longer a member of the physical world. And then, of course, all hell breaks loose. And then he slowly has to condition the spirit. And then one of the ways he would do this, he would just say to them, why don't you turn around? What do you mean? Literally, where you are, turn around and look and see what you see about you. And the spirit probably has been standing in one position for could be years. Time doesn't exist over there. So he's probably standing at the death scene.
He
turns around and there's his mother standing there. You know.
Yes.
Then Randall would also say, hold your hand up. And what do you mean by that? Just hold your hand up and look at it. Bloody hell, I can see right through my hand, he says.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's ways to bring them back to the consciousness.
Yeah. But the problem is that, especially if their lives are negative, it may not be something that they want to go into. They may say, I think I'll just stay here, because if I did bad things here, I may get punished over there. Many people back then were very concerned about that.
I know. But you don't see too much of that anymore, rescue circles, because you would really have to have it together. I mean, Randall and French had been at it for so long that they had the mental power, you know, and the integrity to be able to handle such a thing. And they considered it a very important part of their work. Randall said it was one of the most important things that they could ever have done, to help spirits come to a realization that everything was okay and progress would be open to them. And it's a very, very touchy subject, but they considered it some of the most important work they ever did. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, on the topic of rescue, you're right. Very few people are doing it now. I was privileged to do it with Bruce Moen, who has since graduated himself. But he helped me to rescue a woman who had really been stuck in place for a very long time. And I would have thought I couldn't do it. It was amazing, but it worked. And afterwards, I said, well, that's something. How often should we do that? Because I thought I would then try it again, but I never did. She said, he said, if it were up to me, there are so many people that need this help that you would be doing this all day, every day. And I thought, wow. So there's another, there's somebody else who is telling us rescuing is very important. So now people are saying, well, how do I avoid having to be rescued? Well, the most important thing to do is to always be aware. A natural death is not much of a problem. The only real trap with a natural death seems to be if you, once you're out of your body, you try to interact with the people around your bed because then you lower your vibration. No, interact with the people who've come to get you. That's all you have to remember to do. And you'll be just fine. So what else did they do? What else was interesting about what they were telling, that the spirits were telling us through Mrs. French?
Oh goodness, that of course the mind creates everything, and every single thought, every act, everything you've ever done is there to confront you at the moment of death. So you know, all this orthodox teachings and all that's just blown out of the water when...
Yes.
I was brought up a Catholic and all this, and guilt and sin, yes, all this and this, but none of it is true. Now, I've
right.
never read in 30 years, now, in 30 years of research, and I don't care who's listening to this right now, I have never heard one spirit, through the best mediums the world's ever known, ever confirm anything that the Orthodox Church has said.
Yes, that's right. And I was a Catholic too, and I was the strictest Catholic you can imagine. And there I was doing this research, and it was clear that what I was learning was true from them. And they also, by the way, bountifully tell us Jesus is genuine. Just that nothing else about Christianity is anything.
Well, you know, I mean, In the world right now, there are certain enlightened people that are teachers, you know, that they're here to uplift humanity. If you just go back in time, there have been many people that have appeared on Earth that are teachers, and they're compassionate, and love is the basis of everything they say. And
yes,
it's very simple. And if Jesus existed, he was one of those. But the whole story has been turned into mythology, and who knows what the true story really is. But
the problem is, too, Christians don't follow the Gospels at all. He came to teach. They ignore everything that he taught. Oh, my goodness, this is a whole other program you and I could do. But let's go back to Mrs. French, because I find her fascinating. Had she always had this gift? Do we know how long she had this gift or how she developed it? And do we know anything about her history?
Well, there's very little of a history. She, from a very early age, had the psychic power. And as far as I know, as with many mediums that I write about, they did not require development. They were developed at birth. In the case of Mrs. French, for instance, when she was very young, she could put a pencil in each hand and two pieces of paper, one under the right hand, one under the left, and the two hands would write independently different messages from spirits.
Oh, my. Oh, goodness.
When
yeah,
she
that's
was
pretty
very
amazing.
Young, when she was very young, she got scarlet fever when she was 12 years old, and her hearing deteriorated from that time. What's the evidential power behind the whole case of Mrs. French and Mr. Randall, which really intrigues me, because I was within the grasp of loss when I found Mrs. French's work.
Yes.
Was that it's so evidential because the famous lawyer goes to expose her.
Yes.
Transformed by her gift. She can't hear the very spirits that are coming through her. So if she was a fraud, she can't even hear the spirit. She's deaf.
Yes, wow.
She could see them, clairvoyantly see them, but she could not hear them. So only the people that were there witnessing the seance could hear them. That in itself is a very powerful evidential quality about this. And
yes,
in true selfless fashion, she never took a penny for anything. She helped thousands of people. She went through a very rough time in her life. Her husband, James, was a Union soldier in the Civil War, was shot in the leg at Drury's Bluff in Gettysburg by the Confederates, taken prisoner, and put in that awful Libby prison.
Yeah.
And when he was held prisoner, the Confederates said, "Well, why should we waste any of the anesthesia on him?" He said, "He's a Yankee." They amputated his leg without any anesthesia, and he died.
Oh my!
So Mrs. French, when she was 40, it was 44 years old, she became a widow. Then her son Willie dies.
Oh.
And at that time, she wore the color black for the rest of her life. But still, she gave up herself. She lived in a very small pension from the U.S. government. And the U.S. government, by the way, put her through hell, even raising the pension a little bit. After her husband, who was a colonel, they put her through hell trying to get a pension. But so she lived very selflessly.
Yeah.
She's investigated by the lawyer, and she can't hear. I mean, how more powerful could it possibly be for a case standing, up for spiritualism? It is truly one of the most remarkable cases on record. It really is. And the stenographers.
What I love about these old books, and there are others, although this is really probably the most intense, is that they're so enjoyable to read. These people are living in a very different time, and the readings are really steeped in that time, and they're so personal. It's like in some cases you feel as if you're eavesdropping almost unbearably personal conversations sometimes. The things they say about where they are consistent, by the way. There's never an outlier. They all are in the same place, but it's a very big, complex place, and they're human. They have very different reactions to it. I became quite addicted to these deep trance medium and direct voice medium communications when I could find them, and I found many of them in print, but obviously you've found a great many more that I've never even heard of. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's part of my mission. It's part of my mission now. It'll be I have a new book coming out soon. It'll be my sixth book. So in 30 years, six books, all about some of the greatest mediums. I should probably say that while we're doing this, that the French Revelation can be purchased. I suggest it's purchased through White Crow Books. The book's in its third edition, and it was published by White Crow Books. And you can get that at www.whitecrowbooks.com, the latest edition, which is really nice. And
White Crow Books, I should just say, is very nice. John Beecher, it's just a wonderful, wonderful publisher. They're in Britain, or I think they'd be a lot better known in the United States.
Yeah, he publishes all of the great classics, a lot of great spiritual literature.
Yes, he's wonderful.
A very great company. But getting back to Mrs. French, I'll read for you a beautiful thing. This female spirit came through one night in her own voice.
Okay.
It's about the death change itself. I'm always interested in that when someone passes out what they saw. And she says, sometimes a spirit gravitates, as mine did, to some lonely church-like hall, a quiet place of inner rest and contemplation where the past resolves itself into shadowy pictures which come and go, mapping out the minutest event, thought, or even a word of the past earthly life. I saw that ineffaceable record, which every soul must read again and again as the past returned with its appropriate judgment. Many events. Here's the most important thing, Roberta, from this whole little thing. I read it, lectures I've given. She says, many events for which at the time of their occurrence I felt regret, I now found as inevitable results of previous acts, without which my life would have been incomplete. Deeds and actions on which I had prided myself now showed the littleness for which they sprang.
Right.
Sorrows which had wrung my spirit appeared as blessings.
Oh, my.
And thoughts which I had once lamented, I find to have been inevitable effects. I saw myself to be, as it were, a chemical compound made up of what I had been or what I had done, said, or thought. All things appeared in judgment, and stranger yet, all that I had and all that I possessed, enjoyed, or saw, the very air I breathed was tinctured by myself, so that I saw, felt, heard, and enjoyed only as my inner nature colored my surroundings. All things are real about me, but my capacity to know and use them has sprung from my inner self.
That's beautiful, and that's true as well.
She saw the effect of her own character. She saw the effect of what she herself had created in this physical life.
Yes.
That's the point. That's the very point of all this, is that you are the arbiter of your own future. You are the architect of what you will inherit the moment of death. And no one can tell you what your experience is going to be like. They can only talk from what they themselves have seen.
Yes, yes, exactly. But this
That's
is
how
what,
wonderful the universe is, though. See, the universe is that beautiful.
This is why what you're doing is so important, because when we first get the fact that we truly are eternal, our minds are eternal, we start living in a very different way. I mean, if you think life sucks, then you die, you can do whatever you want. What the heck? Who cares? But when you start realizing this, that this is a precious part of your eternal life, you never will die. Wow, it changes everything. Everything.
And when you realize that there's nobody who can intercede, there's no priest or layman, rosary beads, Bible, nothing.
Yes, that's
save
right.
Save you from your own actions. It's the perfect law, and it's perfect in its operation. No one can save you from yourself.
That's right. That's exactly and right.
I think that's the most fair law that there ever could be in the universe. So that once someone realizes that, they have a pure sense of conscience. They'll know that every action, you cannot hide, no matter how inner of a being you are, you cannot hide the inevitable cause and effect, the outcome of which will greet you at the moment of death. You can't hide from that.
And there's
another
thing.
So for some, it's a joyous, wonderful time, and for some, it's the darkest moment. That's the way it is.
But as long as you follow the law of love and you make love central to your life, and I don't mean just love for the people you know, I mean love for all humankind. If you raise your spiritual vibration enough to do that, then it's going to be the most joyous life you can imagine, that time of your life that you can imagine when you die, because all of that it's as if you've been planting this enormous garden of joy in the afterlife, and then you get to harvest it.
A lot of spirits, they come through and they say, if I could only just, now that I realize what's going on.
Right.
If I could only just go back again, if I could, I would never miss the simple things of life.
Yes.
The things I overlooked that were right in front of me, the things of beauty, the simple word of kindness to my neighbor. Oh, if I could go back, I would have told Mrs. Johnson, who lived on the corner, how beautiful her flowers were. I always overlooked these things. But now, once they're in the spirit world, they say, oh, my God, the world was filled with beauty, and I overlooked all of it.
Yes.
The simple things of life I overlooked, where now I realize they are the most important things of all.
Yeah. Yeah, and things like having wealth or success or fame, those turn out to be terrible challenges for us when we're here, which we have to surmount, or else we will regret that too. Because once you have transitioned, if you're anywhere reasonably developed spiritually, you can have all that stuff. And then you don't want it at all, because it turns out to be dross. Oh, there's so much we learn from the dead. And that's what really why I feel driven, and I know you do too, to resurrect these voices and to teach these things, because otherwise people would not know. And it's so important that everybody comes to know these truths.
Well, there's even with a wonderful form of research is the near-death experience.
Yes.
Which we could get into sometime, but I've studied hundreds of them. And I'm very interested in children's near-death experiences too, because there's no way on earth they could be lying. A child is incapable of lying. Only adults learn how to lie later on. The children don't lie.
Right.
But in a lot of near-death experiences, the person, let's say, is on the operating table, is having heart surgery, and he flatlines, and he's gone, dead, D-E-A-D. He goes off to the spirit world and meets up with guides and spirits, and it's so wondrous that he doesn't want to come back to the earth plane. And in so many accounts, the spirit guide will say, oh, this is nice. And, you know, you want to keep going into this wonderland of possibilities, but you have no interest in going back to Earth, to your family or anything. The spirit says, well, tell me, answer one question before we talk about you. Why are you moving on? What did you do for mankind? And they can't even answer the question because the answer is simple. They did nothing to uplift mankind. It was all about them.
Yes.
So, of course, the spirit guy says, well, we're not going to talk about progress.
Yes.
Right. You're going back to the earth plane. You're going to survive the operation, and then you're going to probably spend the rest of your life helping humanity.
Yes, and so many of them have. Talk about your next book, just briefly. You'll be back in a few months to talk about it with our audience, but what is the new book that you're coming out with?
It's about two mediums who I would consider probably the most powerful physical mediums in the history of in the great annals of historic spiritism. That'd be the Davenport brothers, Ira and William Davenport, circa 1850s, 1900, Buffalo, New York. They were world-renowned. It's a great, great story. And it's going to be my sixth book. You and I have discussed already the Bang Sisters, right?
Yes, yes.
We discussed that. We discussed the Drek Boys.
Yes. And there are two compendiums. We've talked about one. We're about to talk about the other the next time you come back. So we're catching up with all of the books that you've written. And I hate to say this, but we're out of time now. I'm really sorry because we could talk about all this stuff forever. We probably should do it sooner than we will be doing it. I really always enjoy having you here. But meanwhile, big hug, and I'll talk to you very, very soon. And thank you so much for doing all of this. Even though you have this whole big life you're doing, you still spend so much time and effort giving us this gift. We're so grateful. Thank you.
My blessings to the listeners, too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I am so glad you could be with us today. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really get what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is going to be Dr. Raymond Petras, who is a behavioral and non-invasive injury and pain management specialist. He consults with sports figures. He's an international lecturer. He does all this stuff. And he does it because he can teach your mind to do things that you may need to have it very badly do. Dr. Petras is an early practitioner of what will eventually be seen as a great way for us to use the powers of our minds to heal and improve our bodies. He's the developer of what is called psychoneural pain response, or PNPR. He's got that trademarked, which he tells us is a safe, quick, and effective behavioral and injury pain management technique. He also works on weight loss, smoking cessation, and behavioral change. He seems to be able to teach you to do your mind, to help you teach your mind to do whatever you need it to do to make your life better. So please join us next week. Let's learn together about more of the amazing powers of our minds. Of course, this week we've been talking once again with N. Riley Haggerty. This has been Riley's fourth appearance on Seek Reality. We have two more already scheduled. The thing about people like Riley is that they do such an extraordinary job. They do it really you don't make a lot of money on these books. They do it out of the joy of being of service to humankind. And Riley, I think, is frankly just a delightful human being, and what he's doing is wonderful. My own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and soon, very soon, The Fun of Meeting, Fun of Loving Jesus. I don't know why I have The Fun of Meeting. Oh, The Fun of Meeting Jesus is my children's book, which is beautifully illustrated. Not quite time for it yet, but it's going to be a wonderful way to help children understand what's true about the teachings of Jesus as opposed to what the churches say, because none of the churches, of course, follows Jesus at all. If you want to talk about any of my books, or if you have questions, I hear from a lot of people now every day, and and I do answer emails. It takes me a few days sometimes, though, because I'm very much involved in doing a lot of things at once. And some of those things will hopefully come to fruition in ways that will help you. That's the whole purpose of my retirement. I retired from being a lawyer so I could be of service and help you, and that is my great joy. So if you have any questions or you just want to say howdy, just contact me through the contact block on RobertaGrimes.com. I answer every message. If you ever wonder where you can hear Seek Reality, really, we're all over the place now. Just go to the tab on RobertaGrimes.com and click on the tab, and there you'll find all the places where we are. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, Seeking Reality. Please enjoy. Please make the most of this coming week in what is truly only one great, extraordinary reality bathed in love. Please especially know that you are a powerful, eternal being. Please know that you, above all, you are infinitely loved. Most of us don't seem to understand the extraordinary lengths to which we are deeply loved. Please know that you are God's best beloved child, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.